Welcome back to Too Much Future, the show where we play through Fallout and talk about it. I'm Cameron.
What, Michael?
Michael. Oh. Sorry. Teleprompter threw me off. I'm Michael.
Oh, and I'm Cameron.
And today we're going to talk about Vault 15.
Mm-hmm. You've seen Michael doing his now classic Barack Obama impression. Will people in 2019 know that Barack Obama often used a teleprompter and was criticized for it in the 2008 general election?
Only early 2000s kids remember.
Mm-hmm. What Barack Obama was lightly criticized for.
Yes.
How do you ever make it, you know? That's our other podcast. How do you do it?
How do you do it?
Where we just read through The Audacity of Hope, page by page. Oh, gosh. But this is about Fallout. This is not about Barack Obama.
This is unfortunately about Fallout, yes.
I like that now you have FOMO about the... About the Barack Obama podcast.
Right. Now I'm just like, why didn't we do the Barack Obama podcast? That would fit right in with the Range Touch brand.
Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of. But of course, we live under the Stein regime, and we would not want it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama is, of course, living in Sweden now. Safe from the clutches of the government.
Yes. Well, you know what is not safe from the clutches of government because there's no government.
What is that?
It's Vault 15.
It's Vault 15. Can we talk? I've written this at the top of my notes two times. Uh-huh. I feel like we glossed over it last time. I want to talk about it.
Okay.
This world map and this music in Fallout 1.
All right. Let's talk about it. They are good.
Thesis. They are good.
Thesis. All right. I am not inclined to argue against you at this point, but unpack, elaborate. Why do you think they are good?
Well, so the world map, right? We talked about it a little bit last time, but you can just go hog wild.
It's a really weird world map.
Like, you can get into the world map, and you could go anywhere in the world that you wanted to go. I think that is cool.
Right, and it solves, like, to sort of, in case anyone who's listening hasn't played this game, it's not like a Bethesda-style open world where, you know, you start the game and you're kind of embedded in the world and you can, you know, run willy-nilly everywhere, like physically, like, run to wherever you're going. The world map for this game exists on a very weird layer of abstraction, where I think it's supposed to be kind of like the map as it is seen on like your Pip-Boy screen or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
And you sort of see the map as a large grid, and you point, like you click on places on the map that you want to go, and then you watch like your little red cursor travel to that point. So that's how you move from like specific like place map to place map. You don't have a full continuous world. And on during your travels, you can have like I think they're random encounters essentially, where you might fight some monsters or something. But you can like start this game and just like click on the opposite side of the map and then watch yourself go.
Yeah, and it's all timed too, right? Because remember, we have like, what, 200 days or something like that to get the water chip, and you see that little countdown timer in the top left, just tick, 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 just going the whole time. I like it. It's like a topographical map, I guess. It's like, it's kind of weird because you would assume that they wouldn't have satellite imagery of the current time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And yet it does appear to, so a little confusing. But I like it. And then there's all this music playing behind it, which is good. I think this is like by far, by a billion percent, the best video game soundtrack of its era.
It has really good sound design.
It is great. The guy who did it, I can't remember his name. Hold on. I'm going to look it up while we're talking. But he used to have it on his website for free. Mark Morgan is his name.
Okay.
And the album is called Vault Archives, and the soundtrack for both 1 and 2 are used to be available in the public domain. They are still available in the public domain. You can get them on archive.org.
Neat.
I'll put the link in the description.
Thank you, archive.org. Thank you, Mark Morgan.
I'll send this to you, too.
Hooray!
It's good to listen to, but it's all these, like, you know, video games, for whatever reason, have rarely been into, like, ambient music. Like, truly ambulant, or ambient, ambulant.
Yeah. Walking music.
Yeah. but have rarely been into, like, just, like, soundscapey 90s-ass music, right? There's a lot of, like, thumping drums. I've been doing a lot of stuff for Sword Coast Coast to Coast recently, where I've been going to websites where you license music for movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I can find, like, backing tracks for that without doing, like, traditional fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of that. I would say, like, 90% of the, like, licensable video game and movie soundtrack stuff, that's all, like, thumping drums and like, dum 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 dum, which is cool or whatever, right?
Mortal Kombat!
I kind of, you know, just maybe a little bit more bass in it, but yeah, this is a nice change of pace, I think, because it's like, you know, you're just walking around and it'll be like wisping desert wind.
Yeah.
And that's the song. And there'll be like some like guitar embedded deep in it, where it's like, blown.
No, it is. It is very, very good sound. It's good for that sense of place.
Mm-hmm. Well, you should listen to these soundtracks. They're very good. They were in heavy rotation for me for a number of years. You want to talk about Vault 15?
Yeah. Let's talk about the big disappointment that is Vault 15.
went there first.
Yes. I went there way back in the first episode because I had no idea what I was doing, and I killed a bunch of rats, including a big old mole rat. And then I wandered back into the vault until I got to a point where I could not go back any further because it turned out I needed a rope. So this time I came back with a rope and with another rope because you had tipped me off that I was going to need another rope.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right. It saved me a lot of hassle. but then, surprise, the next two floors of the vault are basically just like the first floor of the vault.
Mm-hmm.
Like
chock full of rats,
like a bunch of pig rats, which haven't shown up in the more recent Bethesda era Fallout games, which is interesting. I wonder where all the pig rats went.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Obsidian, where are the pig rats?
Right,
Bethesda.
And yeah, like in a word, this vault was boring. Like, correct me if I am wrong, Cameron, but there is like nothing in here except for some rats to kill and some goodies to pick up. Is that
correct?
Like, that is it.
I went and did a little bit of digging because I thought I got to the bottom of this thing and I thought there's no way this is the only thing down here, because in fact, you get down to the bottom and like you go into a little room and it says, "Oh, there's no water chip here, folks." You know,
yeah,
it's like
there's
down
like
your little screen, your little I don't know, text log. I don't know. What
yeah,
that's
yeah. There's like this weird little text log in the corner of the game that like where it's when you like look at things and you get descriptions. It's where they show up, and it just like it's like the voice of God in your head, I guess. It's the thing that lets you like look at someone through three walls on the other side of the town and know that they're a peasant. And you just like go into the you like walk into the corner of like the lowest floor of Vault 15, and it's just like there's no water chip here.
Yeah, yes, you absolute foolish vault dweller child. yeah, but here's the thing. If you don't need to look for that, that definitely appeared and then was immediately buried by 400 entries of you scrolling around looking at things. And so
right.
I actually had to, like, I wandered around a bit and I had to, like, scroll up in my little feed to go back and check that message. And you get, like, some experience points for finding nothing. It's the ultimate experience. I guess. And, but so I thought, oh, there has to be something here.
Same.
has to be. So I did a little Googling. Mm-hmm. And some people claim that you can find a location that tells you where the mole rats are coming from. And it gives you more experience. I didn't find that location.
What do you mean, a location?
Like a little, you can maneuver around the screen on the third level of the vault, basement 3 of the vault. Mm-hmm. And you can maneuver around the screen if you get close enough to the position from which the rats are emerging. You'll get another little entry that says, hey, this is where the rats are coming from. I didn't get that. So.
Neither did I.
And it was really disappointing because I thought, here was my logic. There is a dynamite. There's a time bomb in the bottom of this thing.
Oh, yes.
So that was there, and I thought, oh, I'll be able to blow something up.
Oh,
and
that.
Go into a different room.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But you can't. That's not true.
No, that would have made a lot of sense.
But I think you can go back, because the Rad Scorpion tunnel, if you remember that from mm-hmm. all the way back, I think you can close off the Rad Scorpion tunnel, so I'm going to try to take my time bomb and go back to the Rad Scorpion tunnel and then blow that up.
Oh,
I didn't think about that till this very moment.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, because now I just have this dynamite and I don't know what to do with it.
I tried to use it several different times during this episode. It didn't work out any of the times.
I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. I've just got some dynamite now, I guess.
Well, so did you try to use it at all?
No. Like, this was like...
You're amazing.
Oh, okay. Dynamite does not exactly suit my current play style, or at least what mm-hmm. I think I can do with the dynamite. I'm just more content to, like, sneak around in my, we got armor. Like, the first armor, not necessarily in the game, maybe you could have bartered it before this, but, like, I got, you know, Eleanor got a cool leather jacket that's, missing an arm or something.
Yeah, it's the Mad Max jacket.
Yeah.
From the Road Warrior. That's in here. And then there's also a spare rope. That's what I was apologizing for about that rope earlier.
Oh, yeah. I was like, well, now I have another rope. Mm-hmm. So Vault 15 was interesting.
Just to say, we got the dynamite, and we also got 2 grenades. These are all going to be very grenades. Important for me later in this episode.
I already know how this is gonna go. Vault 15 was very interesting, even though I said it was, like, boring. Like, it is interesting from a design perspective precisely because of what we said earlier, where there's really nothing here other than some stuff that we picked up and a bunch of rats to kill. And there's not even, if you're familiar with, again, like, the sort of the more contemporary, like, Bethesda, post-Bethesda Fallout games, you would expect at this point that you could go through a bunch of the computers in the vault, right? A bunch of the archives or something, and find out what happened here. There would be a bunch of, you know, logs and backstory for how the vault fell to pieces. There's none of that. Like, none of the computers are workable. And the vault is just empty, except for some rats and some stuff you pick up, and that's it.
Yep. I think I said this last episode too, but there's a certain type of design style that I find interesting here that is like purely Gygaxian mm-hmm. in the sense of like, yeah, the vault's abandoned, it's empty, it's been looted, rats live there now.
Mm-hmm.
You need to fight rats and pig rats and mole rats and greater mole rats because that's who live here now. And so I can appreciate it on that level to some degree, but, But I guess what's also cool about it, too, is like I think you mentioned this last episode where we know already what happened to Vault 15.
Yeah, that right, is true, right? Like, that is the thing, is that we have been told what happened with Vault 15.
Yeah, like, it's abandoned, it's empty, the people who live there now live in Shady Sands, some of them are raiders. Like, you know, I guess it depends on how much information you have, but it's not like there are a billion people to talk to. But, right. You know, so getting there, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess it's abandoned, I guess.
Right. Cool. Yeah, no, it's strangely undramatic for the way that the vaults are going to evolve later in the series. Because it was just like, the vault turned out to be unsustainable, so we left.
Yeah, I guess that is the thing, is like the vaults eventually in these games, and this is even happening to some degree in Fallout 2. I think like the pieces are there. But eventually they become like a way for Bethesda's designers to tell one-off stories that are not related to the main plot.
Mm-hmm.
Like fully self-contained side quests, I guess.
Right.
And that is not how they are now. Like, they are part and parcel of the main quest, and they are boring because much of this world is, in fact, boring. Because it is simulating a wasteland.
Right. Yeah, so then we leave Vault 15, and did you go straight back to Shady Sands?
I went straight back to... Straight back to Shady Sands. This is a new Wind Spirit Heals for me. Ooh, straight back to Shady Sands.
I did too, and then the game crashed.
Yeah.
And I had forgotten to save on the last level, so I got to do that again. But thank God the high-res patch or whatever that you had mentioned, I think, in the first episode. So I have that now. I hadn't realized that there were a bunch of options for that patch that sort of like came embedded with it, like hidden in one of the menus.
Mm-hmm.
One of which allows you to make it so your character is just running constantly. and like it also, you can choose to speed up combat. And I was like, oh, holy hell. Because let me tell you, this game is slow as molasses.
Have you been walking everywhere this whole time?
Yes. I mean, more or less.
Oh my god, Michael.
Yes, it is so slow. So now I am like, so I was like, yes, now I can like permanently run and combat can go places. Fantastic. So I redid the last level of Vault 15, and then I walked back, and then I saved. Then I walked back to Shady Sands, and this time I met a traveling merchant named, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. It's possibly Duke, maybe Duck, but I would say maybe Duke. And that's I don't know. He was a person with a name, and he had some stuff to sell me.
Yeah, I met him too. I think he says something to the effect. He's talking about what do you call it? Right, the hub. I think he has like a little bit of information. I don't know if it's this one. I think that it is Fallout 2 that begins this. There are traders that are on set routes, and if you're in the same square as them, you will encounter them.
Oh.
I know some of that is happening in one of these. It might be in this one. But there's like weird behind-the-scenes stuff that's much more complicated than you would think in this game.
For as like simply as it presents itself.
What happened when you got back to Shady Sands?
I got back to Shady Sands, and I talked to Seth, I think. I talked to Seth. Who said something about so Tandy has been kidnapped or she's missing or something. I can't remember if he said that she's been kidnapped or if she was just missing.
He says my girl, Tandy is
right.
Missing.
Like suddenly we get character, right? Suddenly the writing for these NPCs has some like little bit of character. I was also super confused by that because he does say my girl, Tandy. And for whatever reason, like, I didn't parse that as, like, sort of the weird 1950s-ish kind of slang of, like, my girl, you know? I thought he was referring to Tandy as his daughter. And I knew that Tandy was Aridesh's daughter. And then I was like, oh my god, are Seth and Aridesh? Like, just this completely absurd moment where I was like, are Seth and Aridesh a couple? And, like, they're raising Tandy? And I was like, that's really ahead of its time for 1997. Oh no, probably he's just saying she's his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or he was singing the classic My Girl.
Mm-hmm. Right, because that would have been a huge hit prior to everyone going down into the vaults.
Mm-hmm.
So I
talked to Aridesh first, and he, using his claymation face, is just like, rescue my daughter. Here's a spear.
and he doesn't exactly know where his daughter is. Am I remembering that correctly? Like, his dialogue is kind of weird on this point, where it's kind of like, I don't know, like, Candy's missing. And you're kind of like, oh, like, I don't know if your dialogue is the same, because I know your character, Tonk, has much lower intelligence than Eleanor. But when Eridish said, like, my daughter is missing, and my first and only possible response was, have you tried looking for her?
No, and I don't think that was Tonk's response. I think Tonk was like, oh no. That sounds bad.
It was so weird. Like, so one of the other things that I've noticed about this game is that when dialogue options change based on a character's stat, it is not marked. So you don't necessarily know if something is available to you because it's like just a basic interaction, or because it's like a special interaction based on your skills or on your particular build. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Eridesh was like, my daughter Tandy is missing. And I was just this huge asshole and was like, well, have you tried looking for her?
Well, you better go catch her.
And then he's like, I'm not sure where she is, but maybe it's the raiders who live southeast of here. Here's a spear.
Yeah, they left the spear, and I thought, I was like, oh, dang, I'll be able to use the spear to be like, hey, I know it was you, you know, Sherlock Holmesing them out here and getting them to have some guilt. Tonk was not that smart. So I imagine the difference between Eleanor and Tonk here is, you know, a wide gulf. So Michael, I'd like you to just narrate the entirety of what happened for you rescuing Tandy, and then I'll give you the extremely long 45-minute experience that I had trying every maneuver possible to rescue Tandy.
Okay. I still have Ian tagging along with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I have done something. I have pickpocketed Ian. I have taken his gun from him. I have given him a spear. Ian, bless his heart, now goes into hostile areas before me and gets his ass kicked while I pick things off with my gun. So this is my sort of strategy, my combat strategy now.
He has a lot of hit points.
Yeah. That's how I do it. So I went to the raider camp with Ian in tow, and did not put away my weapon fast enough, and everyone went hostile on me, and everything went badly very quickly. So I restarted. Put away my weapon before I walked into the raider camp. There was a guard, and I was talking with there's just this guard out front, and I could talk with them, and I had a couple of dialogue options. One was just like, you know, I'm like, they're like, basically they're what are you doing here is kind of their orientation towards you. Mm-hmm. And you can say like, I'm just passing through, essentially, like I'm on my way somewhere else, or like, you know, I'm just here and I came through, and they'll just be like, okay. Like, that's their response. You can also ask them about Tandy, but they won't admit to having Tandy around. But they will be interested in why you're looking for her. And you can say, like, there's, like, a price on her head or something, and I'm looking to collect. And their response to me in this case, at least, was, I don't believe you. Like, I don't believe you. And even if I did, I would probably want that money for myself. So no one was particularly helpful. I eventually wandered into the, like, central... So the raider camp is, like, a bunch of little tents, and there's, like, a central shack and then some tents.
Mm-hmm.
I went into the central shack, talked to some more raiders, none of whom were helpful, and then I met their leader, whose name is Garl. And he was a huge jerk, and I had a couple of options for talking with him. And he admitted essentially to having Tandy locked up in a back room. Oh, also there were slaves in this room. Women who are, and I quote, bruised and battered. Some darkness here.
This game has just like some of it, but Fallout 2, I would say, is like almost a game about slavery. In the sense that like slavers and the potential of joining up with slavers or getting rid of slavers that's like a big, you know, side quest plot line to do in Fallout 2. And then,
mm-hmm.
And, like, every city in Fallout 2 has some sort of relationship, either positive or negative, to the Slavers. And then Sulik, who is a character we're going to have a lot to talk about when we get there. but his whole plot is that his sister has been kidnapped and sold into slavery. And sadly enough, I'm just going to spoil it here, Sulik's quest does not have an ending to it. They did not finish it in Fallout 2. And so it's even sadder. But this is just the beginning of, like, slave stuff that populates Fallout that really kind of drops out once it becomes a Bethesda property.
Mm-hmm. So there was that, and so I had a couple of options for dealing with Garl. I could try bartering with him for Tandy. I could have challenged him to single combat, it seems like. The option that I ended up going with, because it was so bizarre, and I have no idea, I think this was probably based on one of my stats, but again, these aren't marked, and I have no idea, like, what stat it was that gave me this option. Mm-hmm. Basically, he was like, you know, why should I give you this woman that I've kidnapped? And my response, my potential response was something like, because it would be good for your soul?
Whoa.
Yeah. This is just a very strange response, and I was like, yeah, sure, let's go with that. This also touches on something that I wanted to mention that I noticed this episode, which is another thing that drops out in the Bethesda games, is the religion that is operating in the Wasteland here. It is not particularly fleshed out at this point, but it was strange to me that I suddenly had this option to talk about Garl's soul. And I believe when I had been back in Shady Sands, one of the NPCs had mentioned the Dharma, which is the religion of the Wasteland, essentially. And Dharma, is, of course, a term that gets drawn out of both Hinduism and Buddhism, and in the Fallout Wasteland, at least in this game, it appears, so it is left up to speculation precisely how a bunch of people who lived in some boxes underground during a nuclear war all came out and then sort of adopted a weird like syncretic I don't know if I just said that word correctly, but anyway, like this weird adopted version of Hinduism and or Buddhism that they would just call Dharma. But we see evidence of this in like the fact that the cattle, the mutated cattle that have two heads are called Brahmin, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this is interesting to me because I think this is part of that part of the game coming from the East Coast and being set on the East Coast. The West Coast. Mm-hmm. My God. But there's a plausibility, right, to this idea that, like, oh, the West Coast gets hit with nuclear fire, and then in the ruins, we all become weird New Agey types.
Yeah.
That totally, like, that this whole sort of suggestion that there is, in fact, a religion, like, building itself up in the Wasteland is just gone, I think, in the Bethesda games. So anyway...
Yeah,
I told Gar.
By the time we get to the Bethesda games, like, religion can only be conceived of in terms of cults.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there can't be, there is no, whereas, like, you would logically assume that outside, that coming out of, like, a horrific, traumatic encounter, that many people would turn to, like, many different types of religion, right, to make sense of the world. That just makes logical sense. The Bethesda games can only imagine that would be, like, destructive and violent and cultish and all fake, right, quote-unquote.
Right. No, and I think, I mean, just the vision of kind of, like, core human nature that you get, or rather the different versions of what is a core human nature that you get between this game and those later games is very interesting to me, right? This idea that individuals are sort of ultimately secular and they're only going to adopt religious sort of framings of things if they're crazy or, like, dangerous in some way, right? If they're being cynical about it. So anyway, speaking of religion and whether or not it gets you anything in the post-apocalypse, it didn't get me anything. Garl got, like, immediately pissed off when I suggested that he could do something good, and everyone aggroed me. And then I died.
Mm-hmm. That'll do it.
Yep. So, on my next time, I decided to finally lean into being the sneaky bastard, as I'm supposed to be. And I came into the camp, and instead of going in through the front, I went in around the back of the main. I, like, sort of walked all the way around, so none of the raiders would, like, catch me. I, like, stayed very close to the perimeter. I came in through the back. There are two unnamed guards there. I fought them and killed them. And then I snuck in through the back, and I found Tandy's little cell, and I picked the lock there, and I got Tandy out. And by this point, I had, like, somehow, like, by this point, people knew that I was there, and, like, everyone had aggroed me again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just, like, ran like hell, right? Like, I protected Tandy because I was like, oh, she's absolutely going to be able to die. But I just, like, got me and Ian around her and, like, shepherded her out through the back while everyone else was trying to use up their move points to get around to the back of the building. And that was how we escaped.
Dang. Powerful.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, in the process, right, I killed, like, I think a couple of other raiders, and they had names, and maybe I would have been able to, like, get some interesting... So, sort of complimentary to the vault that I talked about, where there was, like, so little content there, at least for what I could find out, there might have been content in this raider camp where, like, you know, I learned more about these people and who they were, because there were named NPCs there, but... I did not, because there was seemingly no way for me to step into this space without eventually all of them trying to kill me. So then I got back to Shady Sands, and Tandy just, like, split off, like, and walked back to her spot, and Aridesh was like, oh, thank you so much, here is some experience, and I think he gave me some stim packs.
Damn it.
And then that was basically it.
I wish I had those stim bags. The okay, well, not so simple for Tonk.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go. I mean, that sounded complicated what you just gave, but I promise you, Tonk had a worse time of it. So similar scenario, you know, I go in and I'm like figuring out the space, right? Same as you were doing, talking to people, doing that kind of stuff. I met a guy named Petrox. You didn't talk to Petrox at all?
I did not talk to Petrox. I talked to someone named Diana.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did not talk to Diana. Petrox says he's like the raider expository character. And so you can be like, hey Petrox, what's being a raider like? And he literally says, I wrote the quote down because it is very funny to me. He says, as a raider, I get to travel to many parts of the wasteland.
And the healthcare is great.
Yeah, it's like he's making a pitch. It's like you're at a job fair. And he's like, well, you know, it's a grueling schedule, but we get 2 weeks off per 6 weeks of work, or whatever, right? So but you can talk, even Tonk could talk to him, and after he says that, you can get a little bit of information about, like, Junktown. I think he says, like, that the hub has lots of nice ladies in it, which probably to me means that there's, like, slavery there.
Yeah.
Sadly. But we'll find out all about that later. Mm-hmm. I had a similar thing. I went in and I talked to Garl, and got aggroed, and so, like, immediately reloaded, because, once again, Tonk does not even have a gun. He has a hammer at this point. Just a giant two-handed hammer from which he smashes people and does, like, 15 points of damage. Like, it does a lot. Every rat that I fought in Vault 15 was just, like, one smash, and I hit them hard enough that they will fall down and then slide along the ground.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a thing that got carried through to the Bethesda games, is that you can basically have, like, kills. There's a setting in the menu where you can be, like, kills spectacularly gory, right? Like, ludicrously gory.
Oh, no, but this is even better. This, like, yes, like, bloody disgusting and that kind of thing. No, this is just like a combat movement effect. They're not dead.
Oh.
they like fall down and they slide along the ground, and then on their turn they stand back up. So it's like a way of getting melee enemies away from you, basically.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what triggers it. You know, it only happens some percentage of the time, but yeah, it's rad.
Yeah.
But, oh, yep.
That just reminded me, I should say I did get a level up also at one point during all of this, and I got a perk that I don't know if it's done anything for me. I could have gotten a really useful perk that would have let me, like, for instance, carry more stuff. But I was like, mm-hmm. no, I'm going to do what Eleanor wants. And what Eleanor wants is awareness, which supposedly is going to be, like, I'm going to be able to see more when I look at things. So, well, we'll see how that goes.
Oh, yeah, because it actually gives you, like, instead of being, like, because to determine something's, like, hit points remaining, you can click on them and it'll say, like, they're injured or they look mm-hmm. badly injured. I think awareness allows you to know exactly their hit point total.
Yeah. We will see how that goes.
Yeah, I took the 5% more experience points.
Mm.
I think Chonk needs to level up a lot. He needs a lot more hit points.
Yeah.
So I just went for the raw benefit. And my melee weapons skill is now up to like 108%. So he's very good. Just in case you didn't know that, very important to know, you can level skills up beyond 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's like no additional statistical increase after like 140 or something like that. There is a soft cap. For it. But anyway, so Tonk goes in, runs around, does all this stuff, kind of talks to people, finds Tandy in that back room, and starts using his big boy brain to figure out how could I get her out, right? So first thing, goes up and tries to just aggro Garl and smash him. Garl is wearing metal armor.
Mm-hmm.
Metal armor whips ass.
Like, it does.
It is very strong. And so very quickly I realized this dude's got like 150 hit points and a very high armor value. I'm probably not going to be able to smash him by myself. So I was like, all right, I'll try to be sneaky. I'll go in the back door and I'll do the thing that you did. As soon as you open the door for Tandy's cell, everyone aggroes you.
Yes.
And so, you know, maybe Eleanor has the ability to, like, move a couple spaces and then shoot and protect. You know, kind of run and gun a little bit. Tonk doesn't have that ability because he can only hit things in melee range. And
yeah,
and hitting things with a melee weapon takes up a lot of action points. It's like 4.
Wow.
Yes. And so, this is very difficult for me. Basically, anything that I do, they open up the little door from Garl's room into the hallway where Tandy is emerging into, and they just start attacking Tandy. So I thought, all right.
I put Ian in there.
See,
I pushed him into that space so he would be a blocker between me and Tandy.
I did not have Ian at this point. I get Ian eventually. Because this becomes important. Okay, so it's like, so basically what happens is I was like, all right, I'll do it, and then I'll open the door, and I'll make my way out the back door, killing the enemies in my way, and then me and Tandy will escape. I start working on the first enemy in that hallway, who's like the other end of the hallway from Tandy's room. The door from Garl's room opens, and people start streaming in. It's like 5 different people coming in here. Tandy comes out of her cell and draws a knife and just starts stabbing Garl Death Hand. And hits him for like 10 and 10 and then knocks him down. And the next round permanently, this game uses the language of crippled, which I don't, you know, I don't particularly care for, but just letting people know that's the language. But permanently disables his left arm. So she does like critical damage to that limb. So she's like holding her own. In melee range, once you get enemies down to some percentage of hit points, they start running away, which is very cool. All of them are running away. Tandy has not been hit one time. And I think, oh, what I'll do is I'll just throw a grenade into these, like, 6 enemies crowded in the end of this hallway. Sure, Tandy is standing in that group, but she hasn't been hit at all. So she'll be okay. She'll have, you know, she'll be at, like, half health.
Yeah.
But she won't die. she'll withstand it, right? Yeah. It turns out that Tandy is extremely vulnerable to grenades. So I throw a grenade in the thing and it blows everyone up, including Tandy, and I have to start over. Actually, I take that back. I was like, all right, well, I guess I just failed that mission. I guess I'll just live with those consequences. And I go back to Shady Sands and everyone is hostile. They know in their heart.
That you've blown up Tandy.
Mm-hmm. This is the police coming to get me.
Yeah, they're like, how dare you?
How dare you blow up Tandy? And so I was like, all right, I guess I'll reload. Reload the game. I do a very similar operation, and I was like, okay, I'll stand and fight, because Tandy did so well that last combat, and I did so well. We'll actually be able to fight Garl. Mm-hmm. And so I open up the door that is into Garl's chamber, and I aggressively throw the grenade in there. Because I figure, hey, I'm going to kill two or three of these enemies all in one go. I misthrow that grenade, and it lands at my feet, and it blows up me and Tandy at one time. Somewhere in here, I also tried the operation of just going and standing up beside Garl and then dropping the activating the time bomb and then dropping it at his feet and running away. Because I thought that would work. But that, in fact, as soon as you drop it, that triggers combat. And he got out of the way of the thing, which was disappointing. Yeah. So I go back to Shady Sands. I get Ian. I don't have enough caps for Ian. So I hit the barter button. I trade him like some mutant fruit or whatever for his own money. And then I use his own money to buy him to hire him. In order to do this. So this game is already great systemically. Where I can only imagine being like, I don't want to do it. And being like, oh gosh, but I want this moot fruit.
It's just like walking up to someone like, would you like to travel with me through the wasteland? Well, you'll have to make it worth my while. And there's like, would you like to buy this fruit from me? Sure thing, I love fruit. And then like suddenly the person you're talking to has enough money to hire you.
Yes. And you're like, oh no, what a terrible position I put myself in. But yeah, so I get him and we go back. I go back with Ian and I try it a couple more times and I just can't make it work. We go in and we're fighting our way out and like Tandy just cannot stop fighting Garl.
She is angry.
She is, and I get it. She's not wrong to be angry. She got kidnapped and was going to be sold into slavery. So she has a right to be angry, but I needed her to not stop and use all of her action points on stabbing this person with like 200 hit points.
This is not the time, Tandy.
Yeah, this is not... We'll come back, I promise you. So Tandy just got killed. She got stabbed and shot and exploded every time I tried to do it. Some of that was my fault, some of it wasn't. And so I just left. And I went back. But here's the kicker. So in my saving and reloading, the last time I go back to Shady Sands to pick up Ian, I forgot to talk to Aradesh or Seth. Which meant that when I went to the cons, Tandy was kidnapped, but no one had given me a quest to go and get Tandy.
Oh.
So Tandy dies. I go back to Shady Sands and I'm like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. You know, I wonder if they're going to be mad at me or, you know, will people be hostile? No one's hostile. I talk to Seth. He doesn't say anything about it. I talk to Aradesh and he's like, thank you for cleaning up those rad scorpions. We really appreciate it. So basically, this is like a Schrodinger's Tandy situation in which because she was never kidnapped to begin with, she never died.
Well, she was kidnapped, but her kidnapping did not enter into discourse. Right? Like,
yes.
Right? It did not enter into kind of like the symbolic order represented by the quest chain. And therefore...
she never existed at all, basically.
Right? She's gone. Erased from existence.
Yeah. So, bummer for Tandy, but good for me, I guess.
Yeah. Now Shady Sands isn't going to be totally hostile to you, I guess.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, you know, because you have to complete every major quest in a certain way to create, like, the canonical conditions for Fallout 2. So I imagine neither of us will create the canonical conditions, but at the end of this, because I do remember quite a bit of this as we're playing it, I remember more and more of this game, I will read in the final Fallout episode, I will read the canonical endings for this game.
Okay.
Because I have already at this very early point, widely diverged from the Fallout 1 experience.
You have severed the thread of fate.
Yeah. So yeah, this is it. And we actually don't really have a quest right now.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, like, so I guess we're going to Junktown next, but not because anyone has told us to, but just because we know it's a place that exists that we haven't been to yet.
Yeah, I think we'll do that. We'll go to Junktown and we'll do some kind of questy stuff there. I mean, to some degree, it's like, oh, this is some, like, 90s ass design. But on the other hand, I kind of like that, where it's just like, yeah, you in your head, you only have, like, three locations that anyone has talked about. You have exhausted two of those, so you can go to the hub or you can go to Junktown. You know, your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so next episode, we're going to go to Junktown. What are your just, like, blanket feelings on the game so far, Michael?
This particular episode, even though a lot of us talking about, like, what we experienced during this game was a lot of, like, weird, like, just being flabbergasted by things or being like, this was, like, slightly more boring than I would have liked it to be. Nevertheless, this was kind of the point playing through this segment where I kind of started seeing the game come together in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to what's going to happen next. Like, I'm not, you know, expecting it to be, like, huge and wild and open and systemic, but I feel like the game is sort of finding its voice a little bit more. Maybe that's me learning to read the game, but I think even something like Seth sort of half... like, just in this offhand way, like, mentioning, like, my girl when he's referring to Tandy. Like, suddenly the NPCs are being written with a little more character than they were before. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, you know, I know how games are produced, right? It's not a linear process. So I don't think it's going to be something as simple as, like, as you play, suddenly the writers figured out how to write NPCs with backstories. But I think as we go forward... I'm probably going to start seeing a lot more of the things that people latch onto when they think about Fallout in the future and that get brought forward in later entries in the series.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly, I think, like, the things that stick out in my mind about this game, they're all in beyond this point in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, big things I think about is like, oh, that's what happened in Fallout 1. None of it has occurred so far. So I think that'll be really good. And I think some of, like, the actual NPCs that just have character, just period, show up more. Although you will get infinitely more of that than I will get. I mean, it is a... it is just, like, a raw fact that I do not get access... by having a low intelligence character, I don't get access to, like, 90% of dialogue options. Which, A, shows some, like, inherent ideology around the notion of intelligence, which is, you know, interesting. But like, Fallout 2 fixes this by having low intelligence dialogue options. I don't know if you know anything about this, but, like,
I'm aware.
Yeah. So those are really cool, and I imagine I'm playing... I will play Tonks... great-great-great-great-great-grandson in Fallout 2, so I look forward to doing that, to at least filling out the experience. But, Michael, you have anything to plug?
I do not, no.
Okay. I don't have anything to plug either. Where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, @WarrenIsDead.
You can follow me @CKunzelman. You can follow @RangeTouch to follow the wide range of Range Touch products, including Sword Coast Coast to Coast, our actual play podcast, where I DM Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition Adventure, and Michael and my show Game Studies Study Buddies, where we read academic books about game studies and talk about them for, like, 3 hours. It's real good. People like it. I got some nice messages the other day of people discovering it just now, so...
Yeah, we had a little crop of, like, people discovering it.
Yeah, it's good. I think every episode, you know, hopefully every episode that happens. So The numbers seem to suggest that that is happening. I'll say that. but yeah, so thanks everyone for listening. You can of course join our Discord. You can also find stuff, you're watching this on YouTube, on youtube.com/rangetouch. There might be a podcast feed. I'm not quite sure at this point. We are recording several of these way before you're hearing them, just to kind of be ahead of the ball. But yeah, we will see you on the next episode where we go to Junktown.
So until next time, please remember to put away your weapons before talking to us.
There you go.
That's our sign off.
That's the catchphrase. Goodbye.